reminded, I guess, there's an old story where somebody came to a town to meet an old friend of his, and he sent him a message, a letter. He sent him, you know, I'm coming on this and this day, and I'd love to meet you. And the person's very excited, and he sends back a letter, and he says, I'm thrilled to meet you. I still remember you very fondly, and I really would love to get together. As it says, Mayim Rabim lo yuchel lichpos es ava. The great thunderous waters could not quench my love. P.S. In case of rain, we'll have to cancel our meeting. So, I don't know, somehow I sort of reminded myself that this is a similar... If I wouldn't be speaking, I would think twice about coming out in the rain. So it's... Okay. The piece I'd like to look at is a piece from Hirsch again. We did one last year. This one is remarkable in two ways. First of all, he's writing it as current events, and it is as current today in many ways as it was then. He's also almost not using any psukim or chazal. And I want to tell you the sources that he does use. The sources for the story of Hanukkah and the history that predates Hanukkah, more important than the story, generally speaking, Bayis Sheni history is very little known to us. The primary source is Josephus. In his book about Katmonius Yehudim in Jewish antiquities, a little bit also Contra Apian, where he's disputing with the Roman historian. Those are the main works where we have any substantial information. There is, as far as other books about Hanukkah, specifically more on the Inyan of Hanukkah, there's a sefer called Chashmonaim, which is part of the apocryphy. It's a story about Hanukkah, not known exactly who the authors are. And a sefer called, there's Chashmonaim, Maccabees, and there's a sefer called Megillas Antiochus, which is supposed to also be very reliable. Like all history, it's these works, they don't carry the kedusha of Ksuvim. They don't have in themselves the understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave his askama that this is exactly right. We also are not sure about the angle that the person had when he wrote it. For instance, Josephus was notorious since he was being employed by the Romans, and editorial freedom was unknown in those days. One assumes that things that he wrote about the Romans have to be taken, when it's complimentary, have to be taken with two or three grains of salt. But generally speaking, Josephus' history is reliable. But whatever wasn't politically correct for him has been pretty much in line with what you find. So definitely we rely on that. That's very important. And he's going to be quoting and using him. And let me explain under what context. We have Kisvei HaKodesh. Kisvei HaKodesh are the Tzvarim that were written with some degree of Ruach HaKodesh or more. And that to us is Emes. There's also Binu Shnos Dor V'Dor. It's incumbent on us to learn history, to try to understand the Hashgacha, and to learn the lessons from it. The tricky part is, depending on the person, he can draw different conclusions. And that's why it's a little tricky. But Rav Shlomo Shmuel Hirsch treats us to a perspective of history that he's going to quote some of the pieces, and he's doing it to show how current Hanukkah is in his generation. What's remarkable to us is how significant Rav Shlomo Shmuel Hirsch goes to 1880 or so. We're 100 plus years later or so. It's not any less significant. So let's start the piece. Starting, Heichel Mechav, and again, he writes it in an essay form because some of the people reading it were completely alienated from Judaism, and that's why sometimes there are things, there are questions that strike us as being strange almost. He says, starting with the 25th night of Kislev, Madlikin es Chanukah Mashmona Yomim, and you know, you go through, you light Chanukah Licht. V'chol zeh why, L'zeichem Me'ora Atik Yomim She'esach Shbavar Rachok. For some sort of old event that happened once upon a time. He says, Matam Lahaskir Shana, why keep repeating it? He says, haven't old Jewry died? Will the past never cease to exist? Will it never cease to haunt us? That's how enlightened people of that generation ask. In other words, there's a sense of the old things have lost their meaning. And the truth is, again, today, the movements that seek to radically change Judaism, they take turns at which holiday they want to eliminate, but it's the same thing. This old, antiquated, it's not relevant, irrelevant. Achen, he says, Yehudi avar lo ilom lo yemusu. The ancient Jew will never die. Mishemes al kiddush Hashem, somebody who died al kiddush Hashem. V'chein mishechai chai kiddush etayak yudi, or someone who lived with kiddush and tara as a Jew, eino becheskas meis. He's never a dead person. Zichro shomu lenetzach bekervam. His memory is forever in the nation. Hayodea lehakir toda nitzchis legdolam dos avar. That understand what they owe to the generations that were. And then I'm going to skip down to the last line. He says, "L'chura ze ma'orat tikyom." It seems to be an old event that happened long time ago, before the Common Era, thousands of years ago, and it seems as if it has no relevance. So we'll start with the last paragraph on that page. Shnei achim hoya. There were two brothers, Yoshua v'Chanyo. Now let's explain. This was in the period of Bayesheni. And these are the events that lead up to Hanukkah. He's not going to talk about them to Yochas. You know, we start in kindergarten, and the first grade, and the second grade, and so on, and we start with Antiochus and the Greeks. The real story of Hanukkah starts way before that. And it's not such a pleasant story. He says, there were two brothers, Yeshua and Chanyu, Sheshim Shubikuna Gdolo B'Zechazeh. They were both Kahanim Gdolo. Yeshua Kines Atzim V'Shem Yesun. He was called Jason. He went from being Yoshua to Jason. Vilo Achiv, his brother, b'shem Menalas. Kashenelatz Menalas Levatal Kuno Tevas Jason. When he had to give up his kahuna for Jason, they were fighting with each other. There was a lot of political fighting. Holchu hu b'nei Tuvia. Tuvia was a family that had sort of something assimilated. They had Kohanim, and they were, once they came into power, they were constant source. They unfortunately had many positions of power, and they were not good for the Jews. I mean, they were Jewish, but they were not good for the Jews. They went. So he went to Antiochus. V'vtichu lo lazev eslokatez ha'Yisrael. He told Antiochus, you know, we're interested in dropping those laws. V'chein bikshemen reshus loshev l'Yishalayim. He asked for permission to leave Yishalayim. He asked, this again, this is Josephus, this is history, and there's no reason to think Josephus had any reason to make this up. And he asked to have a Greek gymnasium, when they got the license, they undid the bris milah. Now, I want to explain, in the old days, possibly today as well, undoing a bris milah was an extraordinarily painful procedure. First of all, surgery wasn't what it was today. What it is today, I don't know what they did in anesthesia, and it's not a simple cut. You have to pull the skin. It has to. It was a very painful procedure, and people did it because they were embarrassed to look Jewish, and they undid the milah. This was common. Common people wanted to become Islam. Leman yuchlu ledamos liyvanim gambi marumehem. They wanted, when they were playing on the field and they were engaged in the sports, they wanted to look Greek. They didn't want to stand out. Ulis hoylel befkeres kamoisem, and to be as hefka as them. Klum ze ma'oratik yomen. Does it sound like an ancient problem? The reform movements in Germany started with people being embarrassed to look like Jews, being embarrassed to be different, and ending up pushing people who believed out of the government, didn't recognize them, and so on, because they wanted to become like the nations around them. I want to stop a second and touch on this point. We had many enemies before Yavin, but and we also had many phenomena of worshipping Avodah Zarah. All the Tanakh is one long series of version of Avodah Zarah. But it took a very different format than this. It started with the fact that I noticed that Canaan people are very strong and they're successful, and scientific study leads you to believe that whoever worships the Baal of Canaan must have must be as strong as Canaan or be successful. So let's do the Avodah Zarah of Canaan. The Plishtim have their Avodah Zarah and they seem to be successful, let's do that. It was a sort of attempt at believing in the other gods for whatever the Yitzhara was, either an assumed success. There was not, you don't find in Tanakh any type of process of acculturation or being drawn to be part of a culture. I don't know if a culture existed. I don't know. You don't have that. Yavon was the first time you find a concept of a misyavin, of a Jew who wants to be culturally or totally Hellenized. It's something, even the whole concept, something parallel to Hellenization, didn't really exist. You had kings, they were tough, they were strong, they forced Avodah Zarah on you. You worshipped it either because you valued your life, or because you said, if he's so strong and he worshipped that Avodah Zarah, I guess there must be something to it. Or whatever, you don't want to make any waves or any trouble, and you did it, and that's it. There wasn't a concept of a culture sweeping that you'd like to be part of. Here were two Jews, Kohen and Dolim, who they, on their initiative, said, we'd like to become Misyavit. That actually initiated. There were quite a few Greek kings. There was this, the Antiochus, who was our quote-unquote hero for Hanukkah, was the fourth one. There were three before him, and they were benign. They didn't have anything to do. This triggered it. One, two. The Jews who left the Torah came to people and they said, "Hava nichrois bris ima'amash v'seinu. Let's forge a bond with the nations around us. Shekein me'aziz badalnu mehem. Ever since we left them, matzu oisonot lo'os rabbis. We've suffered a lot. Hadvar matzu oisin kasheves bekerav ha'am. People like what they heard. And many of them went to Antiochus also. They asked to bring the Avodah Zarah of Yavon into Yerushalayim. Is that ancient history? Or this was what was going on in Germany at the time. Third, Jason, Shesom es eino bekunek doylo, holach gam huela melech antiyachis, viftiach lo hon ta'afos, and he promised them a lot of money, tumuras haschus livnois gimnazi b'shalayim, olahanik tashvir eschus ezash antiyachia. He said he gave him a lot of money in return for a license to build a gymnasium in Yerushalayim, and to make Jerusalem a major city of Antiochia, they would have equal rights. Hamelech nana lebakosha shel Yezon v'yipo es kochol lehotzedor po. He gave him the license to do so. Miyad hischol Yezon lahadiach es be'amo lahashes b'chan lili avon Yisrael. Jason started pushing people off the derech, and he started bringing in the Greek Avodah Zarah into Klal Yisrael. He changed the minhagim and the halachas that how they worship Beis Hamikdash. Vehinek b'mkoy minhagim chadashim, he brought in all sorts of new minhagim. Zorim l'ruach ha'am negorim la'Torah, things that were alien to the spirit of the people and were against the Torah. Samach l'heichel near the Beis Hamikdash, he made a big gymnasium and he forced Jewish boys to work out in it. Who gam mal b'tafkina kain gadol? He also betrayed his rank as a kohen gadol, who's supposed to be the holiest Jew. Va'ava begolei mitzvos haTorah, and he was over on many mitzvahs. Kitotzo mikach notchu gam yesa kanes v'Hashem. Because of that, many other kohanim also stopped being over Hashem. Lo dogo kavos karbanes, they stopped being karbanes. Va'holchu aleichole yavanim. And the statue of Mishra Kevin Shem. And they went off there. Kach hishpilas kvod haTorah. That's how they lowered kvod haTorah, and they were very happy that they were considered to be like Yevanim. Lamito shel dava hayu halolu asher misyavdu mishtadlu lechakoyis nos v'dacheihem. So in Ahem, Amuvhakim v'yoyse, Zemek Ros, v'gozen g'zer soyis. In truth, the people they were hanging out with, the people they were trying to be like, despised them. And at some point, they would come out. Klumze me'oratik yomin. Is this ancient history? So let's stop a second. He's quoting here 3-4 pieces in Josephus. This is for many of us a kind of new perspective. The problems did not start with Antiochus. They ended with Antiochus. They started with a Jewish fifth column, that people who began to look around and to want to become like Yevanim and so on. I want to add, I guess, point out a few of the points. The Nisoyon of Klal Yisrael, when they are in Golus, is going to be the desire to remain apart as a people. When before the Churban Beis HaMikdash, before the Golus, we were defined by geography, language, everything. We were Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, and it was not an issue that we would identify ourselves as someone else. We could do right or we could do wrong. But when we come into an alien society, it is natural that we are drawn to it. Even though the events happened in Israel, in Eretz Yisrael was no longer its own identity, and being that it was part of a much bigger, it was part of a big world, the world had already started becoming, people had bigger scope than just their little city states. They were thinking, Helen was actually a movement, a culture that spanned a huge area at its height. And all of a sudden, the core identity of Klal Yisrael began. People didn't want to be part of Klal Yisrael because Klal Yisrael is strange. They're weird. It's a small amount of people, very different and unusual. And it is the nature of people to look at the dominant culture as being the right culture, the important culture. And that's where they went with it. Then it continues. Im libcho yismalei tsar, ala matziv aruchna yored biyadus. If you're upset at what's happening with Yadus, with Judaism in his days, im tabit biyush al tida am, if you've given up hope on the future of the nation, ve'im bekeev lev tikra, and if you're going to and if in a great heartache you're going to say, ha hoyakva eize matziv koyor, so Klal Yisrael never was in such a terrible matziv. Somebody once said, nostalgia is usually a result of faulty memory. Was there ever such a? So he says, as I stack achanis, look backwards. His boynim betold us amur a kvar hoisa kazeis Yisrael. Take a look. It was, yes. Lifnei alpayim shana yafilu kahanim dolim shemarim betorah. There were kahanim dolim that went off. I want to just a little bit put some perspective in what he's talking about to get a sense of the anguish where he's coming from. Today, for instance, the Reform movement is a totally different movement than Orthodoxy. It's two worlds, and except the fact that we're both Jewish, theologically there's nothing in common. There's no overlap in any way, and it's them, it's us, it's theologically, and that's it. The Reform movement started with people that were Orthodox, and Orthodox Rabbanim, some of them. And the great break happened with varying degrees of people who were religiously committed that broke very sharply. It was a movement that tore out from the heart of Klal Yisrael. And there were people that were quite learned and they broke, you know, and there are many reasons for it, but understand that it was really coming from it, from the heart and the Shema of Israel. It rapidly spread. You know, in the beginning of the 1700s, almost everybody was we would call Shema Mitzvahs minimally believing. By the time he was around, there was nothing. He came to Frankfurt. Germany had once been a fortress of Judaism. Frankfurt had been an Ir Vein B'Yisrael, Gdoli Yisrael, huge city. By the time he was there, there wasn't a minion of Shema Mitzvahs in the city. And it looked all gone and destroyed. And people were tearing their hair out and saying, there's no future in this. It was really, really an incredible period of time. It was, on the one hand, you still have memories of people who had been nominally Shlomo Emuna Yisrael, people who had been considered even Rabbanim, and it broke away with a tremendous tearing away, and all of a sudden it was and everybody was there. It's such a rapid disintegration. I want to add another piece that's insignificant. It's one thing when people question something, let's say, due to science, theoretically. In other words, a person says, I thought it over, I went through arguments and ideas, and I've concluded A, B, or C. Okay, so we can identify that as reason doubting. There's the reform movement went from Judaism to quasi-Christianity. It's very hard today to see why it's more civilized to have your day of worship on Sunday than on Saturday. The idea of having an organ in a synagogue, it's all the facing the congregants. It wasn't as if somebody sat down and says, you know, he's having his doubts with his Judaism, he's come up with some new ideas. They want new ideas. It was very clearly a need to fit into the society. And that was the pull. Because, you know, all their answers, the same way as if, you know, one of the tests of something like a modern-day reform movement, it would be try finding that whenever they differed from progressive liberal thought. Did they ever sit down, the Moetzes Gedolei Reform, think through an Indian and come up with a conclusion other than the Washington Post? Something that the chilek on the Washington Post. Maybe they're more advanced newspapers. I'm not as progressive. But for me, and the answer is no. Remarkably, that when they've, you know, the day that they decided this is okay, or this is preferable, or this is good, they're there. So you say to yourself, is this a rational process that has weighed things and decided things, and okay, so then it's man's seichel against, or is it simply an uncomfortable feeling of or desire to be an equal citizen of society? And in a certain sense, it goes against the grain of what we are. Klal Yisrael is Havdalah. Every single week we make Havdalah and we say three things we pick out. Oren Choshech, that's the strongest contrast physically. Yom HaShabbos, Shabbos and Chol, Kodesh and Chol. And Klal Yisrael and Umas Olam. And just like scientifically, there's no way to measure the difference between Shabbos and Sunday. I would challenge any astronomer to find the difference. In the same way, no biologist can find the difference in Yisrael and Umas Olam, and the same kedusha, and part of the reason we need to make that Havdalah is because the Havdalah exists only on a ruchnistic plane in interaction with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shabbos is a day of kedusha, Chol is a day of avoda. Klal Yisrael is kohanim. The world is people waiting to be redeemed by the Kohanim, but it's a different ummah. What went wrong was they looked at Yavon, they liked what they saw, and they went head over heels for it. So he says, if people are upset and they say, was there ever such a terrible times? As he said, look back. And the truth is, if we, I mean, it's a mitzvah of, you know, Binu Shlos Dor V'Dor, to look and understand the issues and problems that were in each generation and to learn from it. I was once part of a panel that tested, they gave out money to, it was Russian Balei Teshuva in Eretz Yisrael, who were interested in going to some sort of chinuch and outreach. And and there was a panel, one person came from America, it was Rabbi Siegel, I don't know how many people, Zechon Evracha, Nate Siegel's father. I think his name was Zev. What? Zev, and he was one. And then they had a pool of a few people at the store that sat with them two or three days, volunteered and sat. So a fellow comes in, and one of the things on the questionnaire was to ask the people to see how well they're involved in modern, contemporary Jewish issues. So he asks this fellow, tell me, what do you think the greatest problem facing the Jewish people is? This fellow was a Baal Teshuva, Rosh Baal Teshuva, Chabadnik, very sweet, very tmimistic, right? And he says, Machlokas. Machlokas is the terrible curse. It never, ever was a situation like this with so much sinas chinam. And Rabbi Siegel, that was sort of that burst. And he said, young man, when was that beautiful tkufa when Chassidim and Misnagdim were running to the police to have each other sent to Siberia? When Rabbi Yaakov Ender and Yonis Eibeschitz were putting each other in Cherem? When the Kanoim were trying to kill Rabbi Yechem Mezakai? When was that beautiful, beautiful tkufa in history that everybody was living in peace and harmony? Don't, you know, yes, Machlokas is terrible, but don't give me that line of never ever. He said, look back. And the truth is, it's meant to tell us it can be done. You know, it does make a difference, and he'll get to it. He said, Hemzanu Acha Yevanim v'notcho es das Yisroot l'imzachem b'nei HaMelech. They ran after the Yevanim and left their religion because they wanted to be liked. Hey, Mesisa v'dichas amasanoa. They talked people out of the Yiddishkeit. They imitated the wealthy cultured Gentiles. And the highest society, and the truth was that Stukim were the quote unquote better element, the wealthier people, the and so on. Hismardusu Bashem Terosa Nutza Shemasaga Skuyas Services Medini. They used their rebellion at Kadosh Baruch Hu in order to get privileges, equal privileges as citizens. And then, in turn, it was a cycle. I find favor in the eyes of the authorities. Authorities give me privileges, rights, money, and I use that to get other people involved. And it becomes a vicious cycle. Vehine gam tkufu zu cholfa v'avra. He says, but it passed. The Am Yisrael is Gaba Mefira Brisa Hashem. And yet, we overcame them. The overcoming the Yevanim was not as important as overcoming the Misyavnim. And we gained a tremendous Chizik and Emunah. We need not to give up hope, he says. We can march towards the future with hope, with faith, calmly. It's incredible. He lived it. He came at a time when impossible was the most sensible word to apply to his rabbanis, to his community, to his country. And when he died, he left a huge community of hundreds and thousands of families committed, beautiful communities that would become a model in many ways for more Westerns, for Western communities. Okay, now he says, it wasn't forced on them. It wasn't caused by the persecution of the Jews. It came because they wanted it. It preceded the persecution of the Yevanim. That caused it. Antiochus never thought of it. It's only when the Jews and the Kohanim came and they said Keiadiska Avad Alavakala, they said that the Judaism already has been thrown, is antiquated. They warn him. That's when he understood that only the unimportant people are still committed, and it's possible to change them. And the truth was, it was a very interesting phenomenon that happened in Europe, in his times, in Eastern Europe, later times. There were people in Klal Yisrael that became Misyavim of that generation. They used it to influence the government. The Tsar in Russia couldn't care less what it did of Nusach Sfard and Nusach Ashkenaz. Even Nusach Ari was okay by him. He had no problem with that. People came, and the Jews came, and they said, the Cheder system is not good, this is not good, that's not good. You have to enact this, that, the other thing. And it's combined with the natural Avas HaYehudim of the Tsar, it was a lethal combination. But the spark that ignited it, there's an extraordinary medrash I want to share in Bereishis Rabbah. It says the following. It's on the pasuk by Vayna Plilim. It says when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created metal, iron, the trees came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a complaint. And they said that you've created the thing that will destroy us, because to chop a tree down, you need something made of iron, and by having iron in the Bria, you are decimating the trees. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, let no tree volunteer to give wood as a handle for the axe, and no tree will be destroyed. You can't use an axe made of metal. It will destroy your arm. You will feel every blow. You needed wood. That's the elementary handle for an axe. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, it's only because the wood cooperates with the metal that the metal can destroy the wood. And that says the pasuk Vayveinu Plilim. It's our own are the this pattern repeated itself in his times. And then he says in the next paragraph, B'mida shata techabed v'taritz es avrecha v'skatshecha, to the degree that you honor and appreciate what's holy to you and your past, kach yichabdo am ha'ischa, that's how nations will treat you. It's if you look at yourself and you appreciate and respect Torah, they'll respect it. Yitochen shebegal sibuz achas tiskel pachas eliyos adam etzim. They'll like you a little more, they'll like you a little less, they'll invite you in, they won't invite you in. But they'll respect you. Because if a person is sure with himself what he is and what he wants, they'll respect him. Va'ulom im ata ba'atzmecha mesiachis bezilzel klap avrecha. But if you yourself, you're the one who mocks his past, makes fun of it. You give no respect to the kvarim of your parents. You're not mechabed your mikdash. And you show no interest in learning your Torah. So why would a stranger, if you yourself make fun of it, if you yourself don't take it seriously? You will have many pleasures by denying Torah, but no one is ever going to respect you. If what you're looking for is the respect from the Gentile, he will respect you if you respect yourself. If you don't respect yourself, you won't get it from there also. What kind of bitter mistake all of the progressive people made, the priests of rejuvenation, of reform. Tzei urei manachach. Now he says, let's take a look what Ner Chanukah teaches us about it. He says, what happened? Be'ikvas ha'asosav adokshem siyam al-Hashem chiloi varasis ha'migdash min tzalam heichol, in response to the constant hasos and adocha of the misyavnim, the constant propaganda, the Yevonim themselves put in a tzalam in the Heichel, they put in a Vorzorin, they were metame, the Shmanim, and so on. And I was going to quote again. One person, Matzel, stood up and he showed that you can remain faithful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu no matter what. And now he's quoting Hashmonai. Even if all of your servants, all, in other words, people from different nations will drop their gods and listen to you, myself and my family will not do so. In other words, this was a counterpoint, whereas the Misyavnim wanted to become Yevonim at all costs. Matasyo Kongolo said, I will not drop what I believe in at any price. It was almost a Zeluma Seh, his Misyav Snefesh against that. And I want to point out something else also. When we speak about the bravery and the courage and the hero, bravery and heroism and courage doesn't start with fighting. It starts with standing strong. This was his position. It may be that every single person will become a Yevani. I and my family will stand. If it needs to be fought for, we'll fight for it. But the strength lies in standing and not bending. Next, let's look at the next one. Lochein kum v'adleikas ner Chanukah b'chag ha-makabim. Go and light the Chanukah light on that yontif. Yeah, they light it in the shul. That's not enough. Mitzvah Chanukah ne'ishu beisai. Mitzvah Chanukah is each person is home. Mabetza b'shiras halaluka beichel mifur. What point is it to sing halaluka in a grand temple? Kasha beitenu ein beis Yehudi ve'ein bo ner shiruch Yisrael. And this was a point that he was making, a very powerful point, and it still has many reverberations for us. The part of the Western culture was that there are no personal halachas. Worshipping God is a social affair in a grand temple. That's what it's like. That's what Christians did in those days already. They were not into any, there were very few personal mitzvahs. It was all the ceremony, and Reform went with it. So any mitzvahs that were not celebrated in the temple didn't exist. And he says, to contrast, ner mitzvah ishu beiso is that you have to worry about your family and your home and so on. I want to add something, and it's not a solicitation for the yeshiva, but it's true anyway. I grew up in the 50s, 60s, and I still remember many magnificent shuls, Lower East Side, Newark, Jersey City. My geography didn't go very far, but grand shuls were all over America. And the Jewish immigrants that came, the ones that were traditional and religious, invested their time and energy in making shuls. They did not, by and large, make many yeshivas. And unfortunately, that was the beginning of the end. Judaism is personal. It's something that you need to live it, and having it celebrated, and that's why he seems to be saying that a yontif like this that addresses that type of inyan is specifically celebrated at home. The lighting over here that we do is a minhag. It's really almost impossible to figure out the validity for it. The takana is on beso. It's a minhag brought shloch. It's not. I mean, it's very valid. But in terms of halachic roots, it's a persuminisa. But it's not at all. It's meant to be. It's called a mitzvah habayis. It has to be a home dafka. And he says. So what's the point of having grand ceremonies when our home is not a Jewish home? Ve'im bo ner shiruch Yisrael. Lo mehechale batei knesses tov yeshu Yisrael. The Yeshua of Klal would not come from temples. And it means temples, it means Orthodox also. Vegam b'yameinu lo nivasha rak mibatei medrashos, ela b'ika mibateinu anu. It'll come from the home. Nu'meyem shadashanu g'nesesh chazanim. The beautiful speeches of the preachers and the melodies of the Chazanim won't help us. It's in the children that the future lies. And if we give them a Ruach of Torah, that's where it will come from. And then he says, Yishtolu kavas nafsham, let them run amok. Yishafas kamos hayados, let them spill all the venom on Judaism. Yadicho alof of Avos Yisrael, let them push away thousands and tens of thousands of Jews from Kal Yisrael. Ach kol od lo kibus anitzas achren, believe a Yehudi achren, as long as there's one spark of Judaism left in one Jew in the furthest village, HaKadosh Baruch Hu laughs at them. Because all you need is one spark. It needs one spark in the heart of one Jew to rekindle the flame of Yadus. Afilu Timu Agoyim's Klaus Rana Kedge was Siru, El Pach Echad Kotten, Kosm of Samus Grand Godel, Bezepin in the Dachas of Teich Lev Nemon. Even if all the oil was Tom except for one small one, Hari Daibek de la Hatsa Migdashas at Sarah. Those words are very powerful and he lived it. I want to add something, it'll give us a perspective on different shitos and certain things. One of the issues in reaching out, and unfortunately, if we look at a census today in Klal Yisrael, everyone's familiar with the Pew study and so on, but we are in a situation where we have an extraordinary percentage of Klal Yisrael that's going. There are different attitudes about reaching out. So I don't think anyone's against reaching out, but one of the issues is the how much are you willing to be flexible and bent? And there are different approaches. There are obviously what you can't bend, Allah, you can't bend. And the easy one is to say, listen, we need to do something, and something is better than nothing. The flip side, the other argument is, as long as you have one spark of emes, time will come and it will light the fire. If you dilute the emes to a point where that emes is no longer doing something, it's no longer the emes, it will not accomplish it. In other words, numbers are, it's just like, for instance, let's say a person has wet wood and he needs a fire. So if he has a pilot light that's small, but it's not going to go out, you can't extinguish it, then at some point the wood will dry, it'll catch fire and it'll go. And that's why there is a perspective to keep the integrity of what you have to its fullest extent, because in time, if it's emes, it'll come out. There's a gray area where you can go back and forth. But sometimes it's hard to understand, well, why don't you reach out? The answer is, at some point you may actually extinguish the little flicker that you have, and then you have nothing. So before you go and try to make the temperature lower, you need to think long and hard about, in a perspective of length of days, rather than immediate needs. So he says, even if they were metame old, pach yochet ze yadlik, this one little jug of oil will be madlik demnorak toshes amigdash achas shekanim dolim bizel so amar Hashem. And you have to understand something. Matisyo wasn't the hero. Matisyo was the fringe extremist when all the important and noble kohanim dolim were misyavnim. And it was he that, because he was so strong about it, is him and his family that relit the fire. That's the real story of Hanukkah. So he says, Al Kain, and his words are so strident and full of so much fire and so much of fight. Al Kain choyva gamalech lehadik ner Hanukkah beisecha. That's why you need to light it in your house. Al ye erech beisecha beinecha. Your little home, don't take it light. Even if you're the last remnant, Ashadama Makabim Zerik Orkov, Rucha Mishtanas Beisai, whose blood of Makabim goes, is still causing your veins. Dalacha Kidai Be Yehudi Echot, Obe Bayas Yehudi Echot. It needs one person, but solid. Even if you have no one that holds like you, and there's no more spirit of Chashmanoim, al yarpi yadecha, don't give up. Keep being faithful to it and allow it to flourish in your house. He finishes that, by the way, once you have that firm candle, then you need to be malam bekodesh omridin. Don't be content with a small little thing. Now start trying to broaden it. That's his conclusion. I want to add another point or two to what he's saying, just to sort of bring some points in. Again, there are perspectives in integrating modern things that are not halachically problematic per se, but integrating, I would say, a sort of a cultural perspective, or better, mores, customs, many elements that we wouldn't, halachically there's not really issues in it. And there are varying degrees. Some people feel it's most appropriate to do so. Some people feel it's necessary to do so. Some people are vehemently against it and resisted any changes. And we're not talking about halacha. I'm off halacha. This is people sticking to halacha, but talking about other issues. And the thinking of the people who resisted it, some fiercely, some very fiercely, let's say dressed, chassidim the way they dress, or even yeshivas today. When I was going to yeshiva, hat was kind of what people normally wore. Today it's strange, but there was a strong weariness of wanting to be like the guy because he's a guy. It's not because it's really better to have this or that or the other thing. It's just that everybody does it. And if everybody does it, I want to be like that. So it doesn't start with halacha. Reform also started with cosmetic changes because it really was the desire to be accepted and look like everybody else. Today, when we have a state of Israel, in some ways a little easier internally to be ourselves. But there are also issues because the world is not small anymore. The state of Israel is a tiny state, and you're one of a huge group of nations. And if everybody, and if on Saturday planes fly all over the world, what does it look like if planes will not come into your airport on Saturday? You're going to be this little asterisk on a big flight schedule, that Israel is messing up all the flights because from Friday night till Sunday till Motzei Shabbos you can't have flights. There's a sense of discomfort. You don't want to be seen as weird, fanatic, fundamentalist, or anything like it. And that's really a psychological drive to take care of halachas that make us look different. It's something that we need to understand is the mechanism today of the Yetzer Hara today. That's where it's coming from. Baruch Hashem, outside oppressions are less, but the desire to fit in and be like everyone else is more powerful than ever. The world is nicer to us. We would like to be part of it. The world is very close. Everybody's connected to everybody else. It's like upon him. So his general point is a very powerful, impassioned piece that expresses his own determination. And on the odds that were, he left a very successful rabbanis to take on a position of 11 families in a huge city, and it wasn't tiny. It was the laughing stock. It was like cavemen left over, kind of, and he didn't give up. And when he died, he left over a huge. He had increased 100-fold, literally. Mei Yasharim, he had increased 100-fold from where he started. It's important for us to understand Hanukkah started with Klal Yisrael, unfortunately. Antiochus was the final blow, but it really started before him. It was Klal Yisrael's, Klal Yisrael's being swept up and wanting to be like the, for the first time in their history, wanting to be like the nations. They then twisted and distorted and perverted Yiddishkeit to fit. They then went to the Goyim and got them involved to force everybody to be like them, because nobody, as long as there's one Jew alive who's different, it doesn't make you feel comfortable. It needed one family that stood their ground and reversed the tide, and in a sense, and that's the Ruach, that's the Neshama, that's the spark of Hanukkah, of Hanukkah.